Welcome to the Jimbo Hannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Online, you'll find us at jimbohannonshow.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Jimbo Talks. As authorities continue to dig for answers to all the questions that came out of the massacre in Las Vegas. Jessica Schneider reports that whatever else we find out, we seem pretty clear on this one. It was a meticulously planned attack.
64-year-old Stephen Paddock had been in Las Vegas for 4 days before opening fire from his 32nd floor hotel room window Sunday night. He killed more than 50 people with rifles that were stockpiled in his Mandalay Bay hotel room. Law enforcement sources say Paddock had more than 10 weapons and that some rifles may have been altered to function as an automatic weapon. The weapons found so far include a .223 caliber and a .308 caliber rifle. One gun shop owner in Utah says he's sure he sold Paddock a shotgun earlier this year.
I recognized him immediately, his name of what it was. He's been in my store. He's frequented here a couple different times. We sold him a shotgun, and so I was starting to get nervous going, did that get used in this rampage?
Investigators believe the firearms were purchased legally.
This is an individual who was described as a lone wolf. I don't know how it could have been prevented if we didn't have any prior knowledge to this individual. It wasn't evident that he had weapons in his room. We have determined that there has been employees going to and fro from his room, and nothing nefarious was noticed.
Paddock lived 81 miles from Las Vegas in a quiet 55 and older retirement community in Mesquite, Nevada. His brother says he moved there several years ago from Florida. FBI agents interviewed Eric Paddock hours after the massacre, but Paddock says he never knew his brother owned anything more than a few handguns. Officials say Paddock was a sportsman and purchased 2 sport fishing licenses in Alaska in 2009 and 2010.
He did not own machine guns that I knew of in any way, shape, or form. He didn't own them when I moved him from Melbourne to Mesquite. Okay? This is something just incredibly wrong happened to my brother.
Eric Paddock is still baffled at the revelations his brother unleashed a barrage of bullets that ended in the deaths of dozens.
I mean, he's never even drawn his gun. I mean, it makes no sense.
Grasping for answers, as are we all. Some, of course, have been not at all shy about jumping on a very familiar answer, and so we've invited back John Lott of the Crime Prevention Research Center. He's president of that body and economist and author of the website crimeresearch.org. And certainly at the news conference at the White House this past day, or I should say the press briefing, it didn't take long for the issue of gun control to come up, John.
Right. Well, I mean, the reporters asked about it, and of course, there were plenty of statements by politicians earlier in the day. The White House response said, look, we still don't know a lot of the facts here. We have to wait a while longer before we can even talk about this issue. I think that was pretty much the correct response. But, you had statements from very early this morning by different politicians. Hillary Clinton got involved. Biden made a comment. You had a number of politicians that made comments pushing different types of laws, everything from somehow working in the issue of silencers into this, so-called silencers, suppressors, and to background checks on guns, but it sounds like the background checks really weren't an issue here, as we often find out with these things.
1-866-50-JIMBO is our number, 1-866-505-4626. John Lott from the Crime Prevention Research Center is our guest, and Sue calls in from Reading, Pennsylvania. Hello, Sue.
Hello, Jim. Hello, Mr. Lott.
Hello.
Now, I'll be very brief. It's 2017. We use the expression, the price of freedom. I quietly ask, are we abusing freedom? I mean, freedom is wonderful, but when it's running rampant like this incident was, the price of freedom, we defeat ourselves when anybody, anything, anytime, and freedom. Now,
Before being too general, are you talking here about the freedoms under the Second Amendment? Is that the freedom you're talking about?
Well, Jim, on those things, I'm not an expert on exactly what rules govern what things, but my questions will be, and then maybe between you and your guest, you can put it in line.
Well, I'm just asking. You seem concerned about the price of freedom. I was just wondering if you had a particular freedom in mind, and it sounds like that you may be concerned about the freedom to own firearms, but I'm not sure. Before we launch into that direction, I thought I would avoid putting words in your mouth. So which particular freedom or freedoms, plural, are you talking about?
Well, yes, indeed. The freedom for just regular citizenry. Now, the military must be considered separately. The military needs the weapons, and maybe that would have to be modified a little, but the freedom for an individual citizen to own these extremely high-powered weapons, where do they really want to use them? And I don't care if they've got money, they've got loads and loads of money, they don't need those weapons.
All right. Now that we have gotten precisely what the freedom is concerning you, thank you for your call, Sue. All right. That is the very crux of this discussion, John, has been for decades, of course, probably centuries as far as that's concerned. How do you respond to a Sue in Reading, Pennsylvania, regarding the abuse of the Second Amendment?
Sure. Well, I mean, you know me, I don't really make Second Amendment type arguments. To me, the issue is safety, and that's at least part of the trade-off that she's talking about there. And I guess the point that I would make is, this is the first attack that we've had with a machine gun, assuming that's what it is. It looks like it is from the news reports that are there. And, the irony is that you look at mass public shootings around the world, whether they be in Europe or other places, and machine guns, even though they're illegal in these other countries, even in a country like France where it's illegal for you to own a semi-automatic gun, so everybody knows the difference. You have basically three different types of guns. You have manually loaded guns where you have to physically put another bullet in the chamber after you fire it. Semi-automatic, one pull of the trigger, one bullet comes out, it reloads, one pull of the trigger, one bullet comes out. And then you have fully automatic or machine guns where as long as you have the trigger depressed, you're going to be having bullets come out. And in a country like France, which has had huge casualties from mass public shootings, in 2015 alone, they had 532 casualties. That was more casualties than the United States had from mass public shootings over the entire Obama administration. There was 527 over that period of time. But using machine guns to do these types of attacks, if anything, I'm surprised that it's never really happened before this, because it's something that you see regularly happen in parts of the world where you don't have the freedoms that she's talking about, and yet these terrorists still seem to be able to go and get these types of weapons. I heard earlier with the earlier guest talking about how easily it is to convert these guns from semi-automatic to automatic mode, and it's not trivial. I mean, you can replace the lower receiver. You have to have a stamp on it in order to legally do it.
Well,
maybe
yeah,
he illegally did it. That's surely possible. But then you're going to have some laws that are broken in terms of how he obtained it. I mean, I guess he could have gone to a machine shop and they could have milled a lower receiver for him.
If you buy a standard AR-15 semi-automatic rifle, that is to say the civilian version of the M16,
right,
and you know what you're doing, and you have access to a machine shop,
right,
with those three requirements, you've got the AR-15 legal weapon in most places, you have access to a machine shop, and you know what you're doing, how long would it take you?
Look, if you know what you're doing, you can make a whole gun to begin with. I mean, if he has a barrel from something and wants to put it in there and can make it, I mean,
well,
if you know what you're doing and you have the tools, of course you can go and make anything
you want. A matter of minutes, right? And not very many minutes.
I'm not sure if he already has an already made lower receiver part of the gun, then right, it's just minutes. There are a couple other little parts that he needs to have. You can go and put everything together and it'd be done in minutes. But if it's actually something that he has to make, because these are highly regulated things,
yeah,
I can't, if I'm regular FFLs don't have this. You have to have a special license to even sell them. And, you know, if one of these licensed dealers have one of these things, they can't give it to you unless you've gone, done your fingerprints, paid the extra stamp tax that you have there, and have a stamp that you can essentially put on the low receiver. Now, as you say, you can go and make this illegally, but it takes, unless you already have the part there, it take, you know, sure, you can mill it. You can mill a whole gun if you have the proper machine tools, but it's more than a couple minutes.
Okay, but nonetheless, let's say a day.
Right. Well, I mean, you have a good machine shop.
Sure.
You can make a lot of things in a day.
Fair enough. All right. We'll take a quick break. We're going to come back with some more. John Lott is our guest. And again, he is the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, their website, crimeresearch.org. And we're looking at the gun control aspect of this entire Las Vegas tragedy, which erupted, it seemed, almost within seconds of the shootings. And, of course, in the digital age, that's not impossible. 1-866-50-JIMBO, and we'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to the Jim Bohannon Show. We're talking with John Lott, an expert on issues of gun control, his website crimeresearch.org, and of course that has come up big time in the aftermath of the Las Vegas massacre. To Dave in Claremont, New Hampshire. Hello, Dave.
Hello, Jim. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
You know, there was a few things that I guess I found were just a little disconcerting. I guess I should say, you know, I'm retired military. I was a boarding officer with the U.S. Coast Guard, and I was in the Army before that. And, you know, the weapon fire that I observed on the video, which was just horrific, you know, it seemed to be more akin to, you know, a belt-fed weapon, something along the lines of, say, a squad automatic weapon, like a saw.
Yeah, I was thinking belt-fed myself.
Right.
I must confess.
And, you know, I guess, you know, if when you're talking about, you know, converting semi-automatic firearms to fully automatic, you know, I think it can be problematic. But certainly you wouldn't get the rate of fire that we saw in Las Vegas, I don't think.
Let's ask John Lott about that. That bothered me. And one other thing I'll bring up, too. But go ahead, John, as regards the rate of fire.
I mean, I think the caller has a good point. I have to say, I don't know how many times I listened to the audio today, but that was the first thought that went through my mind after about the first 20 seconds or so that I was listening to it. So,
did you notice, by the way, that the rate of fire seemed to vary, like the thing was on a rheostat?
Well, yeah,
I've never heard that in
there
my
was
life.
There was a little bit of variation over time in that, too. Yeah. I wasn't, who knows?
I mean, I'm no expert on weapons, but I just have never heard an automatic weapon vary the rate of fire. It goes as it goes, at least in my experience. And my experience is really around nothing more than M16s and M60 machine guns. Scott in Dallas. Hello, Scott.
Yes, good evening, Mr. Bohannon. Thank you so very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm sure you'll understand that we've had an unbearable day of nausea and anguish from this revolting outrage.
Yep.
And I want you to join me in telling America that idiot is frying in a caldera full of lava for this outrage.
Well put.
Yep.
Was that the extent of what you wanted to say, Scott? I guess it was. All right. Well, thank you. That certainly covers a lot of territory. Brian, did you want to add something, John?
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah. I'm sure I've wished to vent more than a few times today myself, so yeah. I understand what he's going through.
Exactly. Brian in Pittsburgh. Hello, Brian.
Yes, good evening, gentlemen. I'd like to say that I am really sick of hearing ignorant liberals and ignorant politicians telling me which of my constitutional rights I need. And the very fact that the people who are doing these shootings have standard capacity magazines for the weapons they're using, not high capacity. 30-round magazine is a standard capacity. And high-powered rifles, that dictates what the average citizen needs to combat that, because not taking anything away from the police or the paramedics, but the true first responders are the average citizen that these people are trying to massacre. And unfortunately, we have to be able to defend ourselves, and we're not going to be able to do that with lollipops or calling 911 and sitting down in the middle of the field waiting for the police to come. So these people are just ridiculous. And I didn't really have a question. I just wanted to get that point in.
Well, you certainly have done so very effectively. Although I would add one thing. Obviously, John, if we were to assume that, let's say, of the 22,000 at the Country Music Festival, if, let's say a couple of thousand had been packing similar weapons, I'm not sure that a firefight in which the fire was aimed at the side of the Mandalay Bay Hotel would necessarily have been an answer. But again, that's not a fair comparison.
No,
I understand Brian's point.
Yeah, I mean, look, having no matter how many concealed carry permit holders you had in that audience, it wouldn't have made any difference. I mean, this guy on the 32nd floor, he could have been an incredibly horrible shot, but given how tightly packed everybody was from the pictures I've seen, all he had to do is fire in the general direction, he was going to hit targets. Whereas you have to fire up into one little hole. You probably can't even see the guy clearly at night there. You know, it would have been an unbelievably expert shot.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if it was possible with somebody with a handgun to fire up
no.
and hit somebody at that distance. I did want to make one comment,
yeah.
and that is you were mentioning earlier about, you know, having access to a good machine shop and what you could make. You know, the most trivial part of the gun to make is the magazine. I mean, it's literally a box with a spring in it. If one wants to go and talk about, you know, being able to get around rules there, you know, if you put a limit on magazines, I mean, I've seen people make magazines of different size in literally like a minute and a half to just go and cut, you know, stamp, cut it, and then fold it and put
yeah.
it together.
I mean, you know, I remember the standard 20-round magazine on my M16 in Vietnam, and I mean, certainly, I'm no expert with metalworking, but it couldn't have been that difficult if I knew metalworking. You're right. Stamp it out, fold it up, make sure the spring is installed and the little plate that pushes the bullets up.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, I could have been taught how to do that, I'm sure, in a day.
Me too. Yeah. I'm sure I could have mastered that.
Yeah. So in any event, more to come. We'll get more of your calls on. And just stay on the line. We'll get to your calls. Again, John Lott is our guest. He's with CrimeResearch.org, president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. And again, if you've just tuned in and you're looking for answers, we don't have them. We don't have them. We know who the gunman is. We know that his background seems as vanilla as possible. Nobody knows anything about what the man was doing. At least that's what we've been told so far. His brother says he moved him from Florida to Mesquite. Saw nothing like this. A couple of handguns at most. And yet we have a carefully, meticulously planned attack that took weeks and weeks of effort. So somewhere there's an answer in here somewhere. Back in a moment. Thanks for being with us on the Jim Bohannon Show. We're talking with John Lott of CrimeResearch.org, the aftermath of the Vegas shootings, and this is Victoria in Atlanta. Hello, Victoria.
Hello, Jim, and your guest. And first, Jim, I want to thank you for your service in Vietnam.
Thank you.
Which I had forgotten to do last time I called in. I have two questions, and you probably don't have an answer, but maybe you do. I have heard that guests on the 32nd floor complained about heavy smoke in the aisles. And I'm curious about smoke detectors. Did they not go off? Do they not register down in the lobby somewhere.
I was told that was the that was how the officers found the room, was that the smoke detectors went off. That's what I heard.
Oh, I saw them sort of going floor by floor until someone said they could heard it, they could hear it upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, I had heard, and again, in the welter of the information of the day, it's hard to recall just exactly where I heard that, but I did hear that it was smoke detectors going off in the room that led police to that door. Whether that's the case or not, I don't know. John?
Yeah, I mean, I'd heard the same thing, but one thing you learn with these types of stories is that very often the initial reports you hear one way or the other are wrong, so we'll probably know more definitively in a few days about
these things. Exactly, Victoria. Thank you, though. A very, very valid thought there. Randy in Reading, Pennsylvania. Hello, Randy.
Hello, Jim. Hi, John.
Hi.
A couple comments and then a question for John. I think one of the issues that is overlooked is when all these whiners complain about how easy it is to convert a weapon, they imply that it's easy, that any Joe can do that, that it does not require special tools that most do not have or the talents for it. And regarding all the cries for new laws, two aspects. What new law could prevent someone like this that just apparently snapped? And if you want to apply restrictions on the Second Amendment, why not also substitute all the other amendments for those same restrictions? You need to have a background check before you can yap on the radio. John, is there a site that people can go to get accurate information that is not considered politicized? While the NRA gives a lot of accurate information, the media portrays it as being nothing more than a gun lobby.
Right. Well, I mean, I'd like to believe our website at crimeresearch.org has useful information that's accurate. We have an academic board of directors from some pretty prestigious people, some of the top researchers from Harvard, University of Chicago, the Wharton Business School, other places on our board of academic advisors. And these people cover a range of different views. We have people on there who are on both sides of the gun issue because I think it's important that people, you know, who have strong views on either side look at the stuff before we put it out to make sure that, you know, it passes inspection.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I like to think we do that.
I note, by the way, the relative ease of making the transformation, and I don't think that it is all that difficult, and I'm not using that as an argument to suggest that any of these weapons be made illegal. I merely note that it isn't that hard, and perhaps it might be worthwhile to look at ways to make it a little harder. But having said that, we go to Bruce in Essex, Massachusetts. Hello, Bruce.
Yeah, two issues that I'd like to make, if you would. The first is that year after year, some psychopath decides to kill somebody, so he goes to a defense-free location and kills them. And the reaction is always that, from one faction, that what we need are more free, defense-free locations, which is to say, you know, put more restrictions on guns, which is alarming. As far as the question about whether an AR-15 could be modified to from a semi-automatic to an automatic, I have a machine shop, by the way, and guns. But the fact is, even one of the old worn semi-automatics guns sometimes start to fire repeatedly because the seal in it, which is what keeps it from firing a second time, which makes it that you have to take your finger off the trigger of a semi-automatic and then pull the trigger again in order for it to fire.
Yeah.
And it really isn't that complicated to change your AR-15 to an automatic.
And I would add one thing. I suspect there would be other semi-automatics which could also possibly be so modified. Again, you're right on the distinction. The difference mainly between an automatic weapon and a semi-automatic is correct me if I'm wrong, John, or for that matter, Bruce, but it is one principal piece of equipment, right?
Yes, basically the sear. You could take your hand grinder and change it.
Right.
I mean, you can do things to damage a semi-automatic gun that would make it just fire continuously. You can go and, you know, bend the firing pin forward.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to go and try putting a magazine into a gun like that, though.
Well, no. I mean, not what you just described. Neither would I.
I mean, just to get the thing started like that, I'd be afraid that the first bullet wouldn't be completely in the chamber when the pin would strike it, and you'd have the whole magazine blow up on you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Oh, yeah, without question. Well, 1-866-50-JIMBO. Judy in Lansdale, Pennsylvania next. Hello, Judy.
Hi there. How are you?
We're well, thank you.
Okay, thank you. I have several thoughts that I'd like to share. First of all, I do not believe the man that they are saying did the shooting actually did it. I think that he was a pawn. I think that they broke into his room or got a key to the room. I think this was very, very well planned.
Well, that's interesting. In other words, did they also force him to go buy all of these weapons?
I don't believe he bought those weapons.
Well, we already have dealers.
The dealers say he did. I mean, right. I mean, you're talking about a conspiracy that involves already several dozen people. I mean, I'll put it this way. If you wanted to go down the road that said he wasn't acting alone, then that might require further investigation. But to suggest that this guy had nothing to do with it, that's preposterous.
So is the real guy, he snuck out of the room before the police were able to go in, and the other guy barricaded the door again and locked it?
Exactly. And there was still firing going on as they approached the door. I mean, he snuck out the air vents
in the room.
He made a pretty quick getaway. And I'm not sure exactly how. He couldn't have gone out through the door. The cops were there. He couldn't climb out the window. By that time, the whole world was looking at the Mandalay Bay. Maybe he was very skinny, went up through an air duct. I would tend to doubt that. To Tom in Wichita. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Jim. How are you tonight?
Fine, thank you.
Well, it didn't take so long to get to the shooter and the grassy knoll thing, I guess.
I
was calling, kind of touching on what a previous caller had said. She had some concerns over how easy it is to obtain firearms, and I think that's an understandable concern. But I don't know how we can stop people from doing evil things through legislation. I remember, I think in 93, a gentleman, person named Tim McVeigh killed a lot of people without a firearm.
Well, it's interesting you bring up Tim McVeigh because this guy had ammonia nitrate, apparently a large amount. I have no idea exactly what that means, but a large amount of ammonia nitrate in his car. And at his home, he apparently had a significant number. Again, I'm not exactly sure what that means, but a significant number of homemade bombs that he had there. So,
sure.
You know, it's if he had access to a machine shop that we speculated on earlier, you know, he could pretty much make a whole gun there if that's what he wanted to do.
It just seems obvious on its face, but it seems like we have to repeat this over and over again. If people are willing to do horrible things, it's not so much the tool that matters. They will find a way to do these horrible things. And I just don't know how we can prevent that through legislation, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, there's some tools that make it easier for them to do it than others. But as I was mentioning earlier tonight, you know, you go and look around the world. Mass public shootings are extremely common around the world, unfortunately. In fact, you know, we've been, as hard as it might be for many people to believe, we actually are a bit of an oasis. We have a lower rate in terms of casualties from mass public shootings, if you look at the entire period from 1970 through January of this year, than Europe has, much lower rates than other places like Asia or Africa or South America. You know, it's amazing how much you have. And the thing is, it's just not that they have these, but machine guns and other things. And I'm even excluding from these totals things like fights over sovereignty. So when you have Chechen rebels take over that Russian school in 2005 and kill 385 people and wound over 500 other people, I'm not counting those types of attacks because those are kind of battles over sovereignty.
Yeah. And as we go to a break here, let me just add one other thought, and that is of the roughly, 193 countries in the world, how many of them have... tighter gun laws than the United States.
Well, I'd say the vast majority.
Vast majority, exactly. Yeah. So the tighter gun laws in all that shooting that's taking place out there,
right,
simply prove again the point that it doesn't always work. Legislation may have a place in some areas of human endeavor, but not in all. We'll be back in a moment. Talking about the Vegas Massacre with John Lott of CrimeResearch.org. And Dr. Lott is an expert on gun control issues. Doc in Wilmington, Delaware. Hello, Doc.
Hello, Mr. Bohannon. And hello, Dr. Lott.
Hello.
I don't know the previous callers have touched upon this, but I'd like to ask either one of you this. Mr. former Police Commissioner Cunningham on Fox News tonight for a brief moment suggested that the international terrorism may be involved in this. ISIS has already claimed that this was one of their foot soldiers. I don't know how much of that is, as Mr. Bohannon would say, in Vietnam, Bravo, Sierra. Your thoughts, both of you, on whether this was a terrorist incident or not?
Well, I mean, so far, we don't have any evidence to that extent. I mean, I'll label it as Bravo Sierra or BS until such time as I see some evidence. It'd be a little different if somebody, anybody, had noticed this man's, let's say, conversion to a militant form of Islam or any one of a number of other hints. But until we at least have a little evidence, John Lott, I'm reluctant to go down that road, even in speculation.
Yeah, well, I mean, I haven't seen any evidence. I mean, ISIS has been caught kind of claiming credit in the past for things that obviously weren't related to it. And, I mean, they don't do that all the time, but they've done it a few times. Here you have a spectacular attack in the United States. Obviously, the United States is a prime target of theirs, so it's not surprising that, particularly for big attacks, you know, that they would claim credit.
Yeah, but obviously a capitalistic retired accountant, middle-aged white guy. He's not what you would exactly call the stereotypical target for ISIS. To Tom in Port Angeles, Washington. Hello.
Hello, Jimbo. Hello, Mr. Lott. How are you?
Well, thank you.
Doing great. Thanks.
I don't see how you guys do that. I sure could use some good news today. See,
well, I've been up since 3. I started getting calls at 3 o'clock.
I'll bet you did.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, did anybody note the range it was from the 32nd floor down to the venue that the band was playing at?
Somebody said 400 yards. That? Someone said 400
yards. That's way out. That's way out. That's
well, that's four football fields. That's a distance. You better believe it. But again, if you're spraying into a large group of people right, with an automatic weapon, I mean, you don't exactly have to be Davy Crockett.
Well, yeah, you just cover the front side with a section of it and squeeze. The previous caller mentioned that this is maybe not homegrown. And that ISIS is either ISIS or Hamas has claimed 3 times now that this is their guy.
They've made claims like that before. It's always convenient. You see a parade going by and you run out in front of the parade and yell, follow me. I mean, again, I would like to at least see some evidence. I mean, something. I mean, an earmarked Quran, accessing militant Islamic websites, something. But
yeah,
I mean,
Catherine Herridge on Fox tonight basically went through kind of a list of false claims, clearly false claims that ISIS has made before in the past.
Yeah. So it wouldn't be new on their part, and of course the nature of their attacks being not particularly a top down type of structure, it's not difficult for them to claim the blame for virtually any lone wolf attack. More to come. Back in a moment. Thanks for being with us on the Jim Bohannon Show. We talk tonight with John Lott from CrimeResearch.org, and Dr. Lott is an expert on gun control issues. Adriana in Moultrie, Georgia now. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Yes. I just want to say on some previous callers that I've heard, I'm not watching the news or anything, but I know that he had an airplane. I know he had an airplane license. And I know that in order for him to have that type of artillery, because people are thinking he's making these weapons, but there is no sign of him making this, although his brother has been to his house and said some other things that are irrelevant.
Well, he purchased the weapons. We're suggesting he may or may not have. It would appear that it's very possible that he may have undergone the relatively minor transformation from a legal semi-automatic weapon into an illegal automatic weapon. We're not suggesting he used a 3D printer and made them out of a block of steel.
Well, she may be referring to the bombs that they found at his home or other things, too. I don't know.
Well,
with the ISIS thing, see, with him having the plane, I'm thinking he could travel over there anytime he wants. He does have a license.
Well, I'm not sure that he has a plane that could travel to Syria. I mean, for one thing, there are issues of landing rights, and second, I'm not sure how big his plane is, but your average private plane would have a little difficulty making it to Syria, and certainly a great deal of difficulty making it undetected, shall we say. So I'm not sure I would go down that road, Adriana. To John in Wellesley, Massachusetts. Hello.
Hi, Jim. That's Wellfleet, actually, on the Cape. Great to hear John Lott. I had the pleasure of hearing him speak at the Kendrick College in Illinois back when I lived in the St. Louis area. Mm-hmm. And I just want to say that I appreciate everything that you do, Mr. Lott, to in the face of sometimes vituperative criticism, to present the facts and to dispel the emotion that so often infects the gun debate. And I hope you'll hang in there, especially in the face of a tragedy like this. I don't really have anything other to add than that, other than to say that in France, where it is almost impossible to own even a handgun, much less any kind of a military-style weapon, two terrorists managed to acquire full auto AKs and kill 130 people. So I don't know what makes people think tightening our gun laws is going to prevent a tragedy like
this. There seems to be a view in some circles, John, and I'll refer this to John Lott, that criminals who go around breaking all kinds of laws from murder to rape to robbery to whatever, but when it comes to gun laws, they treat those as sacrosanct. Oh, we can't get that gun. It's illegal. Right. Really?
I mean, talking about this more generally in terms of crime, you know, the vast majority of murder in the United States and violent crimes generally are going to be drug gang related. And the notion that somehow we're going to be successful in, you know, we have been successful in getting drugs away from these gangs, or that it's somehow more difficult for them to go get a hold of the guns than it was for them to get a hold of the drugs that they sell. I mean, these guys have very valuable property. And, you know, if you think they're just going to carry this around and let other gangs steal them without trying to go and get weaponry in order to try to protect it, you know, you got another thing coming.
Yeah, but of course, if that's what you really, really, really desperately want to believe, I guess in the world of wish think, you can go down that path. We've got about 30 seconds, so what would you like to wrap up on as a thought for us to remember?
I don't know. I mean, obviously, this, we should just wait a little bit before we find out, until we find out more about what's going on. I understand everybody's desire to go and have kind of instant solutions for these things, but often these solutions create more problems than there's worth.
Exactly. So on that note, we will wrap, stay on the line, we'll speak off air, but John Lott makes a very valid point, and that is we might jigger the gross national attention span. Let's find out more. And that's a very good point for us all to keep in mind. Stay with us. More to come. I'm Jim Bohannon, and this is Westwood One.